Archive, grainy and flickering black and white footage of long, low factories. Thick smoke pours out of tall chimneys that tower above them. Travelling slowly along a railway line, then people's feet, women's and children's running along a cobbled street and slowly turning to colour. The woman stops and crouches down in front of her child.
You've just cost me a penny, love.
She picks her up and carries her.
No school today. Ladies, to your work.
A man in a black coat and hat.
There's no schoolroom today. No teacher come in.
Oh, right, Mr. Stamford.
They can play out.
But it's cold.
It's fresh air. Come on. Your work won't do it, so.
The woman follows Mr. Stamford to the factory, looking back anxiously at her daughter. Inside, a long row of women work at a mechanized loom, walking forward with it as it connects with the main body and picking up the bits of wool off the floor, then stepping backwards as it moves away again. The process repeats itself, and as the loom connects, they quickly pass a strand of wool around a wire that stretches across it. Outside, the girl that the mother left behind shivers in the cold, a coarse blue shawl around her head. She stands alone, watching the other girls dance round in a circle together. The women continue at their work, all dressed similarly in headscarves, blue aprons, and drab clothes. The girl, her face pale and lips blue, watches the others dancing, then collapses to the ground. Spanish flu, the forgotten fallen. Archive footage shows a bus driving along a busy street, then horses and carts being directed by policemen in long black overcoats. A smartly dressed man enters a marble foyer.
Hi, Mr. Simpson.
Morning, Doctor.
Good morning, Dad.
Too early to talk about rat poison?
Never too early for rat poison.
Good morning, Mrs. Lytton. Can I have the rats and mice quarterlies, please?
Not a very nice subject to start the day with, is it? Vermin?
Yes, but these are the 1916 ones. I need the current ones.
What, the ones? I think you should talk to this gentleman.
Who is it?
Mr. Stamford, Queen Street Mill. That is for you.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Morning. Any more news on Mr. Lytton?
Oh, just 1 or 2 days. Battalion's on its way home, so they say.
That's good, isn't it? We can all get back to normal. That's the one, I think.
Okay, Mrs. Lytton, forget the rodents. I need the recent bronchopneumonic figures, specifically influenza. There's a child dead at the Queen Street Mill.
Flu? We're done with that, aren't we? Get it in August.
Mrs. Lytton, leave these. I would like you to come with me. I may need some help, yes. Yes, I've been in this job for 30 years, and let me tell you, don't. It does come back.
Cheerio.
This film is inspired by the official account of Dr. James Niven, Officer of Health for Manchester, in November 1918. Certain characters and scenes have been created, but what follows reflects documented facts.
They would normally be in school. We have a little schoolroom for them, but the teacher's sick.
The teacher's sick? Since when?
Since today.
How was the teacher yesterday?
How should I know?
I need you to find out, Mr. Stamford. Indeed, I need you to find out a number of things. Let's start with the lavatories.
The lavatories?
Dr. Niven, Mr. Stamford, and Mrs. Lytton walk onto the factory floor together.
You have only one towel, Mr. Stamford, for this entire floor.
They can bring their own.
And how many do it? How many is that one towel supposed to go around? Now, you must have read my most recent pamphlet, otherwise you wouldn't have known who to telephone. Did you read the bit about common towels spreading infection?
I'm running a business in difficult times, Dr. Niven. Along much more charitable lines than a lot of other men, it's as much as I can do to keep the looms going. I've no men. I've had no men for 4 years.
In the office.
This is the lady.
What's her name?
What's your name?
Mrs. Halston.
What's your daughter's name, Mrs. Halston?
Ellen.
Mrs. Halston, I have to ask you one or two questions so that other mothers don't go through this. How long was Ellen ill?
Came on this morning. Right as rain yesterday night.
Have you had other visitors in the house?
Her Uncle Frank came back from France last night.
And how's her Uncle Frank?
I don't know.
Mrs. Halston, I have to ask you if I can take Ellen's body away with me.
What?
You have to identify what caused this. It will be a great benefit.
Benefit? To who? Not to her.
No, love. But it might stop it happening to the other kiddies.
You're not going to cut her up. Mr. Stanford!
You wouldn't do it if it wasn't going to help.
Have you got beds?
Yeah, yes, I've got a lad.
And you'd have him cut up, would you? I'll not have her taken. I have a husband who I've never buried, who's lying in pieces somewhere with no grave. I'll not have her taken.
Now then, Mrs. Halston, if the doctor says he wants to take the child, then surely he's got good reason, hasn't he? So shall we stop being sentimental? You've still got other kiddies to feed.
Don't you touch her!
Dr. Niven scrubbing his hands.
This may signify the start of a new outbreak. I want an ambulance service specifically for any child taken with flu at school to get them home and quarantine.
So who's supposed to look after them?
The parents, health visitors. There should be a quarantine room in every home.
Bit of a luxury. Most homes only have two rooms.
Well, then they can divide a room with a cut, and all the information is in my last leaflet. I'm on 150,000 more of it. I want all public assemblies curtailed. I want the Sunday school shut down. I want the tram stopped, and I want the mills closed.
You do aim high, don't you, Doc?
The girl's ears have turned blue. Heliotrope cyanosis. It's what happens at the last stages before death.
But you don't have any post-mortem evidence?
Not as yet.
Dunks and Mrs. Lytton are waiting outside the toilet.
What are the figures?
We only have confirmed figures from 2 weeks ago.
What are they?
9 deaths from influenza, 9 from pneumonia, 6 from bronchopneumonia, 9 from bronchitis.
In a population of 1 million, including Salford, which I suppose we must, the Evening News says that this winter, Manchester won't be infected.
I didn't realise that a qualification for writing for the Evening News was a degree in medical science.
We did have a very expensive false alarm in the summer. Dr. Niven, I closed things down for you. There was hardly an outbreak at all.
20% of the people got it. You'll never get
over that. The fatality rates were low. You're twitchy.
Yes, I'm cautious.
It comes back.
Well, why don't you get me the current figures? I'll see what I can do.
Well, that takes time.
But surely, like the doctor says, prevention's better than cure.
So we need to do something now.
It's not my job to close things down, James. It's my job to keep things running. And since we're about to come out of this war, I rather fear that my chief health priority is going to be VD. Sorry.
The three of them are shut outside O'Donnell's office. At night, Mrs. Lytton's typing at her desk by the light of a lamp, while Dr. Niven reads a newspaper at his in the adjoining office.
You'll be wanting some leave, I expect, for when Mr. Lytton comes home. 3 days enough?
Are you sure? Well, thank you, Doctor. That's more than enough.
Only I wonder if you would wait a little later this evening.
Oh, I see.
Yes, but it's just that Dunks is doing door-to-door around the hospital for figures. I want some frequency curves by tomorrow morning. I need something to persuade Mr. O'Donnell.
This is really serious, isn't it?
Oh, no, you'll be fine. You're fairly fit.
You had it in August. It's the vulnerable who'll suffer. When the Russian flu broke out, long before you were born, Mrs. Lytton, I was just a young doctor, just down from Scotland. We did what we could, but we knew very little. An awful lot of children died. But, of course, that was then. Right, what time is it?
A little after six.
That's when I'm going to catch the last London train.
What?
Back as soon as possible. I want to ask an old friend about something. Oh, and chin up, Mrs. Lytton. We're going to nip this thing in the bud.
Dr. Niven leaves the office, and Mrs. Lytton stands looking around the large, gloomy room, with her arms folded tightly across her chest, a concerned expression on her face. She returns to her desk, resting her chin on her hand in a thoughtful pose. Then she types a few keys, but stops and puts her face in her hands. Old footage shows a large factory, then groups of young children walking down a street. There are also some older women with blankets round their shoulders and over their heads, walking with the crowd and smiling. In colour, a group of children are kicking a football at the end of a dark street.
Sam! Sam! Get inside the house. I won't tell you again. Get inside and the rest of you get back to your mummies. Go on!
In Mrs. Lytton's house.
I will not tell you again. Get inside.
An older woman sits in a chair by the light of a single candle as Mrs. Lytton comes in and puts a reassuring hand on her shoulder before warming herself by the fire.
Oh.
The older woman watches her, smiling.
What's up with you?
Mrs. Flynn says your John's lot are back. They've stopped at Salford.
Salford? Oh, man. Well, if he could be walking back from there. When did she say that?
This afternoon. Her lad sent her a letter. They're keeping them in Salford a few more days.
Oh, why?
She didn't say. You know how the army is.
Well, why didn't he send me a letter? And why on earth are they keeping them? God, the war's over, isn't it?
It's only paperwork or something. You've hardly had him here the last 4 years, love. Your John will be late to his own funeral.
Oh, will you stop saying that, Mum?
Very grainy archive film, looking down at the Houses of Parliament in London. On the street beneath a pale blue sky, crowds of people and young soldiers pass by Dr. Niven, some of them carrying Union flags. He checks his pocket watch. Then he's in a large, grand room, sitting opposite an older man who's signing some papers.
The sickness was almost completely unpredictable, and it is very hard to prepare for something one cannot predict.
This is the second wave of it, Sir Arthur. One can always predict that there will be a second wave.
Chances of coordinating a nationwide or even metropolis-wide strategy to any kind of influenza. So slim, they're impossible. London is infected, as are Liverpool and Glasgow. They are the first ports of call. We have neither the resources nor the personnel to contain this. With regret, we must just allow it to take its course.
Manchester has hardly been touched yet, Sir Arthur, and that is why I am here. You have people working on a vaccine, don't you?
I beg your pardon?
I understand that you have people working on a vaccine.
I don't know why you would understand that.
He gives a bundle of papers to a secretary, and the two men wait while she walks out of the room with them.
It'll be some weeks before the trials are undertaken. By that time, this outbreak will have passed over.
We can run trials in Manchester now, Sir Arthur. We can preempt this. We can stop it before it starts.
James, you're right. This is a little more severe than the normal yearly flu, but it will run itself out. And it's nothing compared to what we in public health have been through in this war. I suggest sticking to the sanitary measures outlined in my latest memorandum. Stop men spitting in the streets, ventilate the assembly rooms, and do what you can in general to keep people away from one another. Never mind the vaccine. That'll be the armistice. Well, James, there we are.
How are we supposed to keep people away from one another now?
Original film shows a vast crowd gathered, all of them waving their hands, handkerchiefs, or flags. In amongst the crowd, the people are all smiling and jostling for position. A train pulls into a station with soldiers leaning out of the windows, then in colour, and the people on the platform wave back at them and hold Union flags in the air. As the soldiers disembark, a woman greets one emotionally, but amongst the others, one young man stumbles against a pillar, looking very ill. He collapses to the ground.
Can we get a doctor or a nurse? Can somebody help him, please?
Everybody stand back. Right, get him into that waiting room.
Don't touch the skin. Just the tunic. Careful. Just the tunic, not the skin.
Dr. Niven follows as they haul the soldier by his arms into a room.
Right, we have to clear this waiting room, please. Everybody else. Everybody else.
They clear everyone else out.
We need to isolate him.
What are you doing? You can't just leave him.
We need an ambulance.
There's as many coming as can. They're sick getting off all the trains.
The soldier coughs up blood.
We have to stop the spreading. We have to seal off the station.
We can't enforce it, sir. I'm the only one here. Everyone else is on the armistice party.
What armistice party?
Albert Square.
Dear God.
Come on, sir. Leave him.
Go.
Dr. Niven is left to stand and watch the young soldier behind the glass, who stares at him imploringly as he slowly sinks down and collapses into a seat, deathly pale and sweating. Archive film shows a parade of soldiers marching through the street with their guns at their shoulders, crowds of people walking alongside them. A party at Manchester Town Hall.
Mr. O'Donnell.
James, you remember my wife?
How do you do? Can you please send these people home?
Why?
There is a lot of infection coming home with the boys. The people should not gather.
Don't be such an old woman, James. What do you want them to remember in 20 years' time? The fact they had an almighty party to celebrate the end of the worst 24 years of their lives, and the fact that our municipality sent them all home because we're worried they might get a nasty cold.
And such a young man popping his lungs up at Oxford Road. This is no cold.
Good afternoon, Doctor. How is London?
It was full. Now, did you get over to the hospital? Did you get the latest figures?
Well, there's not much chance of getting anything from today apart from Trudnum.
Sorry, flat feet. Very good for getting you out of the army, not so good for dancing.
But I need these figures first thing tomorrow. All right. I wish we'd just close this door.
Dr. Niven battles through the throng.
Cheers.
He goes into the toilet and washes his face. Then he pats it down with a cloth as he goes and stands in front of a large mirror on the wall and rests his hand on a radiator, studying his reflection. He stops suddenly and listens. He turns fearfully towards the cubicles behind him. Dr. Niven goes to one of the cubicle's wooden doors and opens it to find a soldier and a woman having sex up against the partition. They both stare at him.
Dear God!
He hurries back out into the party, fearfully putting a handkerchief over his mouth and breathing deeply. Then he slowly moves it away and stares at it as if having second thoughts. Later, the party's over, and all that remains is the debris. Bottles, half-empty glasses, and fallen bunting. A flag by an open window flaps silently in the breeze. A doctor on a light, airy and peaceful hospital ward is examining a patient, while the matron sits at her desk near the centre of the room, doing some paperwork. Suddenly she's distracted and looks over towards the frosted glass doors at the far end, where the shapes of hunched bodies walk past, banging into it. Dr. Niven's at a post-mortem.
Heliotrope cyanosis, purplish tinge to the mouth. Named after a flower. My mother has purple hydrangeas in her garden. I can't look at them now.
She's been completely starved of oxygen.
Yeah. And we should expect to see the usual Pfeiffer-Bacillus influenzae and... Oh, God, smells like gangrene. Yeah. His lungs should be white. Well, look, they're full. He's drowned in.
That's the worst I've ever seen. Not even the Russian flu could manage that. How old was he?
21. Just had a birthday, according to his papers. Strong as a cart horse on his demob report. And dead within 24 hours. Who knows what happened to him in France? Gas.
No, I saw this boy off the London train. He hadn't suffered gas. This is something entirely new.
Archive film shows a man and woman carrying a stretcher with a covered body on it into a building. A hospital ward in colour, of a nurse tucking a blanket up over a young boy's chest, and an elderly woman in bed. A soldier's wheeled onto the same ward, coughing into a handkerchief, and a nurse, with a large cloth tied over her mouth, tends to a young child. A doctor, also wearing a mask, chats to the matron. Archive footage shows similarly attired doctors and nurses tending to patients who lie in beds separated by hanging sheets. A nurse tends to a very sick woman, while patients cough around her. In the foyer of the town hall...
Look, I really am sorry, I don't know anymore.
Oh,
doctor. I'm really sorry. I've been entertaining this gentleman in the press for as long as possible, and I probably said all the wrong
things. The Spanish flu, where's it really come from, Doctor? America?
Regardless of where it's from, it's here. You can tell your readers to stay inside.
Well, what do you say to the assertion that the majority of American troops currently stationed at Old Trafford are presenting with the disease?
No comment.
What about this immunity we're all supposed to have? Can we assume that if you had it in the summer, you won't have it again?
I'm afraid I cannot answer that.
Are you going to have to close down the city?
Look, I can't answer any of these questions, and don't make up your own answers and then print them.
Listen, why don't you take a leaflet?
Yes, print that if you want to be responsible. And don't panic, people, and don't print rooms.
Doctor, just man to man, if we had it in the summer, are we immune?
I really don't know that.
You're going to have to close the city.
You hear that from the town hall.
Thank you.
Dunk's reading from a book in the office.
All families were swept away together, but this was indeed at the very height of the distemper. Time inured them to it all, and they ventured everywhere without hesitation, as I occasion to mention at large hereafter.
What's that?
Daniel Defoe. A journal of the plague year.
Please tell us that you found something more recent than that.
What plague year?
1665.
Oh, 1665?
The epidemiology is quite accurate. The first spread of infection, then dormancy, during which people start to move about again, then a second spread, even worse than the first. Dr. Niven was right. That was our first wave back in the spring.
Well, it's not plague, it's flu, isn't it?
The
The flu has nothing in common with pneumonic or bubonic plague, Mrs. Lytton, and it is not helpful to refer to it in that way.
Well, except that a second spread is common to most infectious diseases if the incubation period is long enough. It's the same with the Black Death, the Great Plague, the Plague of Justinian in the middle 6th century, even your Russian flu, Doctor. It's because of human behaviour. People believe it's over, they start moving about again, and up it pops, worse than before.
All this is medically established.
Yes, but I'm talking about socially. Aside from all the other problems, I think we need to start preparing for the social difficulties. It's the same with all significant epidemics. Social order breaks down. You have looting, fighting, unrest. The rich leave and the poor remain to die.
What?
Please, could you keep to the statistics, Mr. Dunks?
All right.
Dr. Niven's old report.
Medical office?
I found this in the library, too.
Well, not much of any use in there.
You can accept the charges.
I thought that it wasn't spread by breath. It probably was. I thought that civil intervention wasn't necessary. It probably should have been. And I'm afraid that I allowed myself to be convinced by the powers that be when they said that they didn't want to notify the disease.
Ma'am? Yes.
Well, I did better than Sir Arthur Dam Newson. They were dropping like flies while he was MOH in Brighton.
Oh, God. All right. Just stay. Just stay with him, all right? All right. It's Sam.
Who?
Who am I, my son?
Oh, right, Mrs. Lytton, get yourself home right away. Quickly, we can spare you, please.
Thank you.
Yes, quickly.
Dunks shuts the door behind her.
I don't want you talking about plague. People fight in the streets because they get panicked. And if you say the word plague to them, that's the first thing they'll do. It is a plague, though, isn't it?
Film of the old uniform streets of Manchester and three very small children sitting against the wall of a house. Mrs. Lytton runs down the road to her house.
Oh, it's hard. A lot of sweat.
Yeah.
What's the advice, love?
Right. We've got to keep him isolated and, well, let's get that window open. Get some fresh air in.
Weren't we to keep a fire going? Weren't we to keep it warm?
I don't know. Isn't that normal flu? Well, they never said what to do when you've got it. Only what to do to, you know, to stop it spreading. Right. Let's wash our hands and I'll get some water from the pump.
That's it.
Well, maybe we should move him in there. You know, let's get something to put a curtain up there and we better stay in here. Maybe he needs a mask. Maybe we need a mask. Oh, Mum, I don't know.
Archive footage of a nurse wiping a sick toddler's face. People crowd outside a house as an ambulance crew carry a stretcher inside. A woman tends to a girl, then looks up and stands as they reach her and lift the child's lifeless body onto the stretcher. They wrap the child in blankets and carry her off. Looking out over many houses, then back at the town hall, Niven and Dunks walk through the foyer, and Dunks drops his papers.
Oh, bloody idiot! Oh, dear. Oh, yes, well,
that's
not
a one-armed man helps Niven pick them up.
He's sick, shuffling these damn papers all day. No bloody use.
Yes, it is. I stopped counting.
There's a woman down our street who posts a white feather through our letterbox every week.
You are not a card. You've got flat feet.
You stupid bloody clerk.
Stop it, Mr. Dunks. This is your war, if you want to fight it.
Eight men sit around a table on the stage of a large empty hall.
We'll have more of Dr. Niven's pamphlets printed. We'll get disinfectant and coal to as many houses as we can. Hygiene and warmth are the best ways to prevent the spread of the illness. Those who are sick will have a shoulder to lean on, while the rest of us keep our heads down and carry on. Isn't that right, Dr. Niven?
No, that is not what I've been telling you. We need to close the city. This pestilence spreads at about the same rate that a man can travel, and it spreads easily. We don't yet know how, but probably by direct contact, skin to skin, possibly by contact with infected materials, which we call fomites.
Dirty handkerchiefs, anything with infected sputum or blood on it, any soiled clothes or fabric should be burnt straight away.
Do you want everybody wandering around naked?
No, they don't want folk wandering around at all. You want us all to stay at home, don't you? That's what you've told your pet journalists, isn't it?
Yes, I want everybody in isolation.
Close my cinemas. Cancel the trams.
Cancel the trams, close the cinemas, shut the schools, the mills, the public houses. Help the hospitals deal with the patients that they have and not provide them with thousands more. Shut the city.
We can't enforce that. We'd need the army.
Half the army are in Salford Hospital.
We're not establishing martial law. I wouldn't know how to in any case.
Well, short of a miracle cure, this is the only way to stop it.
I've nothing from London on this matter, Dr. Niven, and we must follow London's lead.
Yes, London is letting it run its own course, however fatal. But this is Manchester. Manchester makes its own choices, its own destiny.
Too bloody right.
If we do implement these closures, it is to be understood that they will reopen and be back to normal again as soon as possible.
It is understood.
I will not be closing my Sunday schools.
I beg your pardon?
As an officer of God's communion, I refuse to sanction the closing of the Sunday schools.
This thing kills children.
Adults can look after their own spiritual well-being. I will not be turning the children away.
O'Donnell follows Dr. Niven into the corridor.
Don't look so depressed, James. They'll come round.
When the children are dead? We need to isolate now, or this thing will get worse. We need to cut it off. We need to starve it to death.
Mr. Gold has agreed to clear his cinemas.
Well, that's good. For how long?
Oh, 15 minutes between the shows. I asked for 30, but 15's enough to clear the air, isn't it?
Well, what do you think?
I think I'm doing my best, James. You can't isolate an entire city, even in the best of bloody times, and certainly not with no police force, the army away, and people all starve to death if they can't get into work. Look, be realistic. We're going to close most of the schools. You've got that.
And the city will provide milk, sugar, and coal for sick families.
When?
Immediately. I'm not a monster, James.
And how will we get it to them?
I don't know. Door to door.
We'll run out in 5 minutes. We cannot abandon people to their fates. We moved on from the days of the plague. We need a system.
Well, you provide me with one, then!
Dunks has been holding back, watching.
Plague? I thought we weren't supposed to mention plague.
I need you to find out the exact quantities that we have available of milk, Glaxo, coal and sugar, and their costs. I also need to find out how many men and vehicles that we have at our disposal. And don't begin to tell me that there isn't the time.
A man walks along a corridor, knocking on doors.
Meeting at the council chamber, I'm sure Mr. O'Donnell could spare you. Public monuments and lavatories has now been subsumed into health. Gentlemen, please.
Righto, two of you go to the Salvation Army, two of you go to the Boys' Brigade, two of you go to the Women's Social and Political Union. Dr. Niven wants at least 3 volunteers for everyone here. Come on, this is our war now.
Oh, today will be mainly a paper chase. Tomorrow, the real work will start. We will find the homes with children from the school registers. We'll find the homes without a man from the war casualty list. We'll find the poor homes from the special assistance register. I want to have all these documents and papers here and collated by tea time. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Trams have stopped running. Prepare for some extra legwork.
£6 worth of milk, £25 worth of coal, £30 worth of sugar.
The street.
No, that's for the entire city.
Good God and Ireland. Well, let's see what these devils are. See what we've actually got. All these things are miles out of the city. Let's stir things up a bit. Let's get this coal into where it's really needed. That's like there, there, there? How many delivery men do we have?
Well, it's changing every day.
Let's work on the assumption that half of them will be ill on any one day.
20 wagons.
And how many homes can they do in a day?
Well, they can do streets.
No. I don't want streets. I want it targeted at homes.
Which ones?
Well, the homes with a family and no man there. Homes that live on less than 18 shillings a week. Homes that require assistance.
I don't know where they are.
Well, that's why we sent our people out. They're in there, there, and there.
Niven and Dunks are sitting at a table signing papers. Numerous people bring them documents which are stamped with Manchester Health Service. In the city, civilians wearing masks carry trays of bread through the streets.
Masks are available for those who wish them.
They also hand out food parcels and fruit. The town hall is a hive of activity as men and women, mostly wearing masks, go about their duties. A coal train pulls in.
Right, over here, please. Over here, thank you. Take this one, just directly to Stretford Street. Half a dozen houses there without coal.
Straight on to Heatonmoor, Mossside and Didsbury.
Homes, yes, homes. Specific homes, not streets, homes.
No, there's not enough. Pardon? There's not enough coal, and there's not enough wagoners. There's more of them ill than we thought.
Then we have to send it to the parts of the city with the most children. That has to be the priority.
Okay, over here.
Parts of the city with the most schools.
We've had those three on that trolley there.
A woman wheels away a bag of coal. Back at the town hall.
Yes, will you kindly pass on a message to Sir Arthur? Well, I'm terribly sorry to hear that, but yes, the message is that we are ready and anxious to conduct trials of the vaccine here in Manchester to stop this thing spreading further.
The hospital wards fill up, and a soldier carries another sick girl in. Old sepia photographs show a long room with hanging sheets on either side to separate the beds, and nurses going about their tasks. Then four nurses posing with masks over their mouths, so just their eyes are showing. Then a huge warehouse full of beds separated by sheets. Dr. Niven's in his office.
Well, would you send someone down the street to tell her? No, I understand, but what is the point in me dictating a telegram? In what way is that different from you sending someone down the road with a message? Oh, yes, right, I understand. Mrs. Lytton, please come back to work, sickness permitting. Stop.
Dunks walks somberly into the room.
Well?
We've lost another 300 since Monday.
Damn it.
And there's something else.
He draws a W-shaped graph on a board.
I think there's a pattern. We expect to find deaths at each end of the spectrum, and there are, but there are also a considerable number of deaths here where there should be very few. The curve of mortality peaks between the ages of 20 and 34.
Oh, perhaps it's because the very young and the very old are dying at home, and what we're looking at here is the middle group who die in hospital.
No. You know as well as I do, they shouldn't be dying at all. There should be no deaths here at all. They should be best equipped to fight it off.
It doesn't make any sense. For the young, fit, healthy.
Well, troops often expire when they come back home.
Oh, no, I wouldn't explain enough. Why are the strongest now the most vulnerable? Why are they now in the most danger?
It's perverse.
Yes, Dr. Newman. Yes, I am Mrs. Lytton's employer.
Is this where Mrs. Lytton lives?
Yes, Brick Street.
Is Brick Street on our list?
No, I don't think so. It's not a priority. This Not so many schools here. What did happen to your eye, by the way?
I advised a gentleman against spitting in the streets. This is the thanks I got. Which one is it?
The two of them wait until Mrs. Lytton's mother opens the door.
Mrs. Lytton's house?
Yes.
I'm Dr. Niven. I received a telephone call.
Is everything all right?
You'd best come in.
They find Mrs. Lytton sitting in a chair, looking pale and grief-stricken.
Mrs. Lytton?
She doesn't even turn fully to look at him. Dr. Niven slowly walks into the room, followed by the mother, then Dunks. He looks behind a curtain hanging in a doorway and sees Sam lying on a small bed. The young boy turns his head away. Then Dr. Niven spots a telegram on the small round table in front of Mrs. Lytton and goes over to it. He picks it up and reads it.
You're all the way to Salford.
I'm so sorry, Mrs. So sorry.
Died day before yesterday. Apparently it were quick. They buried him already. Some of his pals buried him. Apparently he wrote me a letter, but the sergeant, you know, told him to burn it. Burn all his stuff.
God, Peggy, I'm so sorry.
Stops it spreading, doesn't it?
She carries on looking up at Dr. Niven.
What did you do about soldiers, Doctor?
I didn't...
What did you do, you know, about the grown-ups? Because it's not the children, is it? I mean, he's fine, just a bit off colour with it. It's the men that it's killing. You know, it's three on this road, and now my John...
So what's happening with this sickness? It does nothing that we expected.
Well, who's going to look after this lot if I get it, eh?
Looked after, you'll all be looked after. I mean, the system is now in place.
What bloody system? Well, your system might be working elsewhere, but it ain't working round here. I mean, have you been outside lately? Of course you bloody haven't. There's people starving behind their own front doors because no one will go anywhere near them.
People are frightened.
You're meant to be in charge. You're meant to know what to do.
Peggy, the doctor's come all this way to see you. He only means well.
Sorry.
Mrs. Lytton sobs in her chair, and Dr. Niven puts a hand on her shoulder. He lets it rest there for a while, squeezing once, then goes over to join the other two by the door, and they all head out of the room. They stand in a small group in the passage.
I will ensure that her wages are paid for as long as she likes. She can come back to work at any time.
Thank you.
A masked ambulance man helps Mrs. Lytton outside.
Take her to the monster. Attention, Dr. Dickinson, if he himself is not ill, tell him that she's incubated for query 3 days. Low bloods and fever, but no cyanosis yet. Thank you, driver.
Walk on.
The ambulance is pulled along the passageway by a single horse. Original film shows a similar carriage being pulled along a wide cobbled street by a galloping horse. Then they're unloading the stretchered body. In colour, The once crowded hospital is now overflowing with patients of all ages sitting in the corridors where nurses try to tend to them. The matron stops and looks around her, momentarily overawed before going numbly back to her work. Outside, undertakers wearing masks carry a body on a stretcher, with mourners following behind them. Bodies lie in corridors covered with white sheets. Dr. Niven's washing his hands in his office as Dunks comes off the phone.
Thank you. Bye.
He slowly goes in to join the doctor.
Latest figures? Coming in like clockwork now every damn day. Why didn't people give their figures a fortnight ago?
London's a catastrophe. They're losing 1,500 a week. Starting to call it another Passchendaele.
I don't know what else I can do, Mr. Dunks. I've been doing this all my life. Ask me to get clean water or milk or get rid of rodents. But even stop TB, I can do that. I've done that, but I can't stop this.
A young man comes in with three small boxes.
Just arrived from London.
Dunks carries them to his desk and opens the top one. It contains a black wallet which holds several vials of liquid. In the hospital...
Doctor, limited stocks of prophylactic vaccine. Immediate distribution, please.
Come with me.
Dunks goes off with the doctor, while Dr. Niven remains standing at the top of the steps with a handkerchief over his mouth. He stares down them, then goes to meet Mrs. Lytton's mother, who looks at him with haunted eyes before leading him away. He follows her through the sick and dying to Mrs. Lytton, who's lying on a stretcher propped up on the stairs.
Oh, dear God. Matron, why is this lady not in the main ward?
We have no more beds, Doctor.
Well, here is to a point. Although that's not critical.
And look at the fingernails. You must attack the keratin for some reason. It's all right. I know it looks terrible, but I've known them survive like that.
What is your prognosis here, Matron?
She'll be all right, providing she makes it through the night. If cyanosis presents, it's not so good.
Yes, but there's no cyanosis presenting.
Not yet.
That's why I insist that she has to find a main ward. She needs to have oxygen into the lungs as a matter of urgency. That is the center of the attack.
I'm aware of this, Doctor.
I know you're under pressure, Matron, but please.
I'll see what I can do, Doctor.
You're taking care of, rest assured.
He walks off, leaving Mrs. Lytton's mother with young Sam. Dunks is standing on the balcony in a courtroom, holding a handkerchief over his mouth. He's looking down at the corpses which have been stored in there, all covered with white sheets. Dr. Niven walks in and joins him.
What is this disease doing? Everyone gets flu, everyone always gets flu, but why is it the strongest to die? And so horribly. The hemorrhaging in these lungs is the worst we've ever seen. It's as brutal. It's like they've been attacked.
Well, illness is a battle, isn't it? It's a war.
Why has this last war been so destructive?
Because it was a war of attrition.
That's right. Because we have more horrible weapons, because each side was equally matched and couldn't overrun the other one without tearing itself to pieces.
For the past 4 years, we've been pounding the same patch of ground into oblivion.
Maybe the flu is like that.
You mean the stronger the defences of the person it's invading, the bloodier the battle?
It simply passes over the weak. It just overpowers them and moves on. But with the strong, it stays and fights to the death. It actually likes a fight.
Niven and Dunks walk back onto one of the hospital's lighter and calmer wards, where reporters mopping the floor.
Thank you, Matron.
Thank you, Doctor.
You'll pull through if you can just hang on.
She won't give up, Peggy. Not without a fight.
Dr. Niven sits down and nods once, then looks up at Dunks expectantly. Dunks, slightly surprised, turns round the chair that he had indicated and sits down. Dr. Niven pulls back the curtain and looks in at Mrs. Lytton sleeping. Nighttime, and her mother and Sam are asleep on two chairs. Mrs. Lytton's bed's on the other side of a sheet. A nurse steps out from behind it and wakes the mother, who goes in to find her daughter has revived a little.
Peggy? Hello, sweetheart.
Dr. Niven and Dunks go in to see her as well.
She's coming round.
Hello, Peggy, my dear. Peggy, how are you feeling?
John, my love. Come back.
Sam steps through the sheets and she sees him. She smiles and tries to sit up, but he only stares at her. Suddenly, she starts struggling to breathe.
I think the child should leave now.
Mrs. Kershaw? Mrs. Kershaw, please. It's all right, sir. It's all right now.
Nurse Cyanosis has presented. Go to the doctor, please.
Two nurses hurry in. One of the nurses leaves again, and the doctor and first nurse each stand on one side of Mrs. Lytton, trying to comfort her as she sits up in the bed. Dr. Niven and Dunks are sitting opposite each other at their desks, both writing. In the adjoining office, the one-armed man types at Mrs. Lytton's old desk. He adjusts the position of the typewriter with his stump, then looks up at Dr. Niven and nods with a smile. Dr. Niven looks over at Dunks, who returns his gaze with a shared sadness and empathy. Dr. Niven rubs his eyes wearily, then stares thoughtfully down at his desk. Later, they're both in O'Donnell's office with the mayor.
Well, you managed extremely well, both of you. It's your efforts that have stopped Manchester going to hell the way of Liverpool and London. How many have we dead? How many have we dead, Mr. Donks?
2,500.
Out of a million.
So far, most of them women, many of them were young.
Yes, I appreciate that. What about this vaccine?
The vaccine's made no quantifiable difference to the rates of infection or mortality.
Might have done, if we'd had it in time. A lot of things might have made a difference if we had done them in time.
Well, we can pat ourselves on the back. Manchester escaped the worst. Anyway, we've got to get on. We need to get this city moving again. Get the schools open. We think it's the right time to announce the end of the epidemic. The death rates have dropped.
And we're stretched to breaking. It's nearly spring. We must get back to work.
Wasn't the Great Plague signed off in the spring, Mr. Doctor?
Yes, that's right. This was no Great Plague, James. And in no small part, thanks to you. But we've isolated the city long enough. We need to get back to normal. Let's declare it over. Forget the whole business. Put this ghastly second wave behind us.
Dr. Niven nods, reluctantly and slightly alarmed. He and O'Donnell both stand, looking down at the floor. Dr. Niven slowly walks over to the desk, picks up a pen, and signs a document. O'Donnell frowns as he watches him. Archive black and white film shows a crowd of children smiling and waving their caps in the air. There was a third wave. It killed 1,000 more people in Manchester, as well as 70,000 across the rest of the UK. UK final death toll, 228,000. Global dead, at least 70 million. Dr. Niven stands on a beach, looking out at the ocean.
It is not necessary to understand the epidemiology of influenza to see that more might have been done to limit the spread of the disease, and that public health authorities might be expected, in future occurrences, to press for further precautions to be taken in the presence of a severe outbreak.
Dr. James Niven committed suicide in 1925. His body was found floating off the Isle of Man. Standing on the beach, Dr. Niven takes off his hat. Superimposed beside him, a portrait of the real man with a pointed goatee beard. The Forgotten Fallen.